WBEZ's nonprofit spotlight is supported by UChicago Medicine, providing expert primary and urgent care with locations throughout Chicagoland. Their walk-in urgent care locations offer a variety of services for adults and kids 7 days a week. No appointment needed. And for the visits that can wait a day or two, flexible hours and online scheduling make it possible to find a primary care provider partner. Learn more at uchicagomedicine.org.
How does AI even work? Where does creativity come from? What's the secret to living longer? TED Radio Hour explores the biggest questions with some of the world's greatest thinkers. They will surprise, challenge, and even change you. Listen to NPR's TED Radio Hour wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Sasha Ann Simons, and this is Reset. Before we get into this next episode, a note that we'll be discussing suicide in Chicago and steps being taken to reduce the suicide rate. People who are considering suicide need mental health care. That goes without saying. But in Chicago, there's a shortage of mental health workers. And the most recent data show that the number of suicides in Chicago is rising in Black, Latino, and Asian communities. In an effort to address this, the city's health department is turning to members of the public, specifically city workers and people living in neighborhoods with the highest suicide rates. The goal is to provide trainings so people can identify warning signs and take appropriate action to help prevent more suicide deaths. To hear more about this program, I sat down with Kathy Calderon, Director of Mental Health Operations with the Chicago Department of Public Health, and Kristen Short, Health and County Government Reporter for WBEZ. Here's Kathy explaining what we know about the number of suicide deaths and the suicide rate in Chicago.
Yeah, so we have our Healthy Chicago Atlas that provides metrics around suicide data, and we needed a strategy for our department to address suicide prevention. And so we see data where there are high suicide mortality rates across the city. The community with the highest suicide mortality rates is Mount Greenwood, mm-hmm. followed by Calumet Heights. And we also see high suicide mortality rates in Norwood Park. And so we are looking at the community areas that are impacted by suicide disparities, as well as populations. So we see higher rates of suicidal ideation amongst Black males, mm-hmm. as well as LGBTQ populations. We see in non-binary and trans populations that they are seven times more likely to think about suicide, as well as we see higher rates of suicide amongst older adults. And we saw that emerge, especially through the pandemic. And so we have different sources of data that we are excited to utilize this new suicide prevention initiative to get more nuanced, to understand what the trends are and how do we triage supports, both the trainings as well as services.
Yeah, you mentioned during the pandemic that uptick was among seniors 65 and older, as well as Black residents. What else can you share, Kristen, about the racial disparities that we're seeing in the data?
Right. So I looked at the data that Kathy's talking about. I also talked to an assistant professor at the University of Chicago, Janelle Goodwill, and she studies the mental health of Black Americans and has looked at the suicide crisis in Chicago. She looked at data from 2015 through 2021. So it included 2 years of the pandemic.
Okay.
And she found that the suicide rate is highest among white men. But she saw these increases in what Kathy mentioned too, increases among Black men and women, Latino men and Asian women. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, a lot of the data is pretty similar, but that was what Dr. Goodwill found as well.
Why are we seeing disparities between people from different races, Kathy?
It's a good question. And it's something that I think we need to continue to explore to really see kind of what the mental health safety net looks like for Chicago, where services are rendered, what are the stressors that people are facing, and really get more advanced understanding of Chicago's specific epidemiology around suicidal thoughts and suicidal behavior. Mm. I would also be remiss to not mention our youth, and they are also struggling with higher rates of suicidal ideation and suicidal behavior.
Really? Mm-hmm. And what age range are you speaking of?
So amongst teenagers, but also, you know, we are seeing suicides at younger ages as well for youth. And so it is important for us to utilize this training, but also tailor it for youth. And it can be conducted for youth. And I know we'll talk more about the specific model that we're using, but it's important to really incorporate youth and their caregivers and supports.
Well, let's get into it now. This month, the Chicago Department of Public Health launched the Question, Persuade, Refer program. How does that work?
Yeah, so I would say it's a larger suicide prevention initiative and a big catalyst for it and a mechanism for CDPH to get free, no barrier resources out there around suicide prevention is the question, persuade, and refer model. So this is an evidence-based model that trains everyday people on how to look at the warning signs for suicide, how to talk with someone who might be experiencing suicidal thoughts or distress, as well as get them linked to care. And so we know when we are talking in the public health space about prevention and promotion, there are many facets to what that look like. Mm-hmm. What that looks like, and so we're taking a really exciting approach to it. In that, I work within the Office of Mental Health, so we receive a lot of training requests. I provided this opportunity across our department at the Public Health Department, so we have 55. Wonderful public health professionals across disciplines who have learned this model to be able to train the public.
Have you heard of anything like this before, Kristen?
You know, I didn't until I went to one of these trainings recently. But then when I was researching the story, I found that this model has been around for quite a while, and it's been rolled out at universities. It's been rolled out with the TSA. So it is really a community-based model. You know, they call people gatekeepers, right, when they go through this kind of training so that they can go out into their communities and really spot the signs and refer people to help. So it's really a public health approach to this. Since you mentioned at the top, right, there's just not enough mental health providers.
Yeah.
You know, for people to even get to the point where they need treatment. So this is a preventative measure.
Why is there that shortage of mental health workers, Kathy?
I think the issue preceded the pandemic in that, you know, 1 in 4 youth were able to get to care that they needed, that we just don't have enough professionals, a workforce shortage. However, the pandemic really exacerbated that need and that everyone experienced behavioral health harm. Everyone went through collective trauma around the pandemic, and mental health became more front and center in conversations at the federal level. And so we were able to receive a lot more investment in mental health at the public health department to really look at how do we address the need and talk about it. So I think the pandemic exacerbated it, but also looking at fragmentation in the system in terms of how people get care, where disparities are, those are all factors.
I think there is also too, I mean, Kathy, you would know this best considering you're working with these folks as well, but there's a lot of burnout among mental health providers themselves. So right when you have so much more people reaching out to you, the need is greater, and then you're taking on all of that care and treatment, that has also led people to leave the industry or just take some time.
WBEZ's Nonprofit Spotlight is supported by UChicago Medicine, providing expert primary and urgent care with locations throughout Chicagoland. Their walk-in urgent care locations offer a variety of services for adults and kids 7 days a week. No appointment needed. And for the visits that can wait a day or two, flexible hours and online scheduling make it possible to find a primary care provider partner. Learn more at uchicagomedicine.org.
How does AI even work? Where does creativity come from? What's the secret to living longer? TED Radio Hour explores the biggest questions with some of the world's greatest thinkers. They will surprise, challenge, and even change you. Listen to NPR's TED Radio Hour wherever you get your podcasts.
Now, we want to bring another voice into the conversation with us. You trained a cohort of instructors. Michelle Evans-Brock is one of them, and we've got her on the line with us now. Welcome, Michelle.
Hi.
Thank you so much for taking the time to join us. I understand you're shadowing right now for the program. Is that right?
I am shadowing.
You're shadowing?
But for clarity, I have earned my certification.
Okay.
But what I'm doing now is I'm shadowing before I actually come out into the forefront to actually do some training. I just wanted to know how it looked because I want to make sure that when I do step out front, I want to be 100%. I want to be 100% prepared.
For sure. Why did you want to do this? Why did you want to participate in this program?
I wanted to do that, number one, because I have someone in my life whom they are near and dear to my heart. I'm one of the fortunate ones that we're having this issue, but I have not lost anybody. And I'm not trying to lose anyone. And so being here at CDPH and then learning about this program, I was probably one of the first ones to raise my hand and say, yeah, I'm in. In any capacity, I want to be there. Because I'm sensitive to my loved one, but not just my loved one, to people, you know, all over the place. And it's kind of like, and I mentioned to someone else, people say that, and this is true, that sometimes all you need to do is smile at someone, because most people are not paying attention, and people are feeling alone, and they're feeling like they don't have any attention. No Yes. one's watching them. Nobody's caring for them. And so sometimes just a smile and a hello can do it. Yeah. But I needed to do more. So when I learned about this program, I was like, fine, now I will learn more about the signs. Because yeah. what I don't want to see happen, I'm about to cry.
It's okay. Thank you for sharing. Take your time. It's not easy.
I don't want to be in a position. Oh, let me get this straight. Hold up. I don't want to be in a position where I've taken a mindset or an attitude or someone's feelings for granted, and then something happens, and I'm like, but I didn't see that coming, or I saw it, mm-hmm. but I didn't recognize it in the realm of this issue, and I didn't step forward to try to figure it out before it was too late. I don't want to see that happen. I'm not going to allow it to happen. And so the other thing is, when we talk about mental illness, and I'm not a professional, but I know what I see. I know the community that I live in, and I know that we see the homeless, and we kind of take them for granted. We kind of figure that, okay, if you're out there in the street and you're living on the street, you probably have some level of mental illness. You have people who are working. They're clocking in every day and every night, you know, depending on the shifts that they work, mm-hmm. and they are thriving and they have families, but there's a level of mental illness, and we hear about it and we see it all the time. We have police officers who are killing themselves. These are people who had, you know, the seven-figure or six-figure job.
Yeah.
And you would think that they're happy. They have families. And then they take their own lives. And it's like, okay, what did we miss?
What did we miss?
And that's what we have to stop doing. We have to be cognizant. And so this is for everybody.
Yeah.
This is for everybody. This is everybody in the household, the family in the household, you know, the kids in the household. Everybody needs some level of understanding so that when we see it immediately, yeah. we know what to do. We know what to say. We know what not to say. We know what the triggers are.
Right. Kathy, let me bring you back in here. Michelle's talking about warning signs, right? It's not as easy as it sounds, though, right? What can you share about what to look for?
Yeah, I think it can look different depending on the person, but we keep an eye out for people who start to engage in isolative behavior or who may fall off the radar a little bit, not answering their phone, not engaging in social functions, maybe feeling more down. These are some preliminary signs that you may see that may look like depression, but you can also see more externalizing behavior, disruptive behaviors, yeah. or agitation. And so really keeping an eye out for someone, and bigger signs, you know, when someone is preparing for dying by suicide, they may be getting rid of their possessions. They may be, you know, thinking about what might happen once they're gone and making comments about that. So yeah. really keeping an eye on that. And, you know, what's been really great with Michelle and all of our instructors right now, they've committed to being passionate about supporting others in this and learning themselves. Mm-hmm. The majority of our cohort is not specialized in mental health, but they are really equipping themselves with those skills that will help them.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned that, because when I first learned of this program and before our conversation, one of my initial questions was, what about the risks to members of the public? I mean, you hear Michelle's passion and emotion when talking about this. This is not easy work to do. So how do you handle those kinds of concerns? Like, is it fair to put regular folks in a position of a professional mental health worker?
Yeah, in that way you frame the question, no, but that is, they're not considered a professional mental health worker based on the certification. So they have a certification and being able to provide a QPR training, yeah, which is an hour-long training that covers suicide myths, warning signs, how to engage in a conversation with someone. You know, many, and so it's been a really great process for instructors because some of them have a hard time even saying the word suicide. And so now they're really developing their approach for how would they talk with their loved one? Do they take a direct approach? Do they take more of an indirect approach? And based on their own self-awareness and what's comfortable for them,
yeah,
as well as, so it's more so skills for lay people. And this is, you know, a term that I use, but it's for everyone who's interfacing with someone else.
Right.
And then the last piece that's really important that we emphasize is this is not a method of counseling. It's something that is supposed to enhance an interaction and to provide an opportunity for someone to get to the help they need. Mm-hmm. And so the last piece is focus on linking them to professional care. And that includes helping people develop preparedness around the city's crisis resources, as well as how do you help someone get to that care they need and how help-seeking behavior looks.
Yeah. Well, Kristen, you mentioned earlier you spoke with a researcher, Professor Janelle Goodwill, about the need for early interventions in schools. What else can you share about what she said?
Right. I mean, she advocates for, we could step back a little bit, we talk about like the access issue of finding a mental health provider, right?
Yeah.
She is advocating for reopening the mental health clinics that were shut in Chicago. She is advocating for access, really, in general, so that people can be able to find a mental health provider, so that they even have awareness on how to go about navigating the system that's really difficult. Healthcare is so complex. And that healthcare is accessible in terms of that it's not going to be a barrier if you have insurance or not, right?
Mm-hmm.
So Dr. Goodwill and I talked a lot about access issues. And for schools, I mean, where that comes in is obviously like what Kathy talked about, like making sure that kids have that emotional stability early on. And if they need help, spotting yeah. those signs.
Leave us with this, Kathy. Where can folks get more information about the training schedule and locations?
Yeah, I invite you to look at chicago.gov/suicideprevention. On that website, you will see a list of the current trainings that are available, and it'll indicate if it's available to the public. There's also, if you scroll down, a way to request a training from our team, and we'll set that up for you. You can get to know the instructor cohort as well as develop preparedness around crisis resources in the resource section.
This episode of the Reset Podcast was produced by Linnea Dominic and mixed by Max Lubers. It was edited by Daniel Tucker. Thank you for listening. We'll talk again tomorrow.
My name is Liz, and as a teacher, I think that WBEZ provides endless sources that I can bring back to my students where they can also engage in a deeper understanding. I teach government, I teach U.S. history, and I have used sources from WBEZ in order to help enrich the understanding of my students.